excited? I just made a mess out of the first service. And they loved it, they said. They said, make another mess. I went, okay. I guess you had to be here, but it was kind of fun. We had a good time. This morning I got a call at 7:35. I was bringing my wife into church and dropping her off. And so it was pre-shower. You wouldn't want to see me pre-shower. And it was Shauna calling me and telling me, Jim, I can't go to work today. And she works on Sunday. She runs the children's department from kindergarten through third grade. And she said, Lauren, I don't know if her water broke. Didn't get any details. I should have. But she headed to the hospital. And Shauna, those of you that know Lauren, and it's our regular drummers, and Jason's back there laughing. It's his soon-to-be nephew, right? Nephew? You got, what do you got? Look at that. Oh, isn't that cute? Look at that, girls. Yeah, isn't that cute? So sweet. Is it a boy, girl? Do we know?
A baby boy.
It's not here yet, right? Yeah, when you have the first baby, you go in the hospital thinking, ah, we'll get this done in a couple hours. Sure. Tomorrow morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah. But if you saw Lauren, who is all a 5'1", maybe, when she's standing on her toes, she had a baby. She was with child, I want you to know. So we're really excited for her. And Shauna's her, not doulos, but whatever you call them, helpmate, support staff, you know, all that stuff, in case dad fails, which most of us do. So also, next week is Mother's Day, and it's always fun around here. We got a little surprise for you. You moms know what's coming. You know the song, but it's going to be kind of fun, I think, and cute. And also, I have a big announcement next week. That it probably won't be big to you, I'm just telling you ahead of time, but it's big to me. And so I'll probably give that next week, so you might want to come. Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University is starting the last Wednesday in May, and it's going to be new for us, and we're really excited. There's a lot of interest, and you need to sign up online. I think there's a flyer in your bulletin that coaches you through all that, if that sounds good for you this summer for 9 weeks. And if not, it'll come around next year. And but good stuff. And also, the women's retreat is in 3 weeks, I believe. And it's going to be a good one in terms of who's speaking, and the subject matter is going to be very impactful. If you hear it, you'll never forget it. And excellent material. The speaker is stunning, and she'll blow you away on a whole bunch of levels. So today's theme is Jesus Faces number 3 and number 4. And you'll get that as we work through things. I'm telling you this opening caveat, because we're going to deal with judges today and people that are deciders, okay? A small-town baker bought his butter from a local farmer. After weighing his butter, he concluded the farmer had been reducing the amount in the packages and charging the same. Not cool. Not cool at all. Therefore, the baker accused the farmer of fraud. In court, the judge asked the farmer, "Do you have measuring weights? Do you have measuring weights?" "No, sir," replied the farmer. "Well, then how do you manage to weigh the butter that you sell?" "By the pound." The farmer answered, "Well, when the baker began buying his butter from me, I thought I'd better get my bread from him, because that's how we do it in the country, right? I have been using his 1 pound loaf as the weight for the butter I sell." And remember, the baker and the farmer are in the room. And he says, if the weight of the butter is wrong, he has only himself to blame. And one of the astounding parts of the story we're living through right now with Jesus and being confronted and arrested and condemned and all that stuff on the front end of the final day of Jesus' life is that, and we're going to see it again today, they're talking with Jesus and he's right in front of them. And they can't see it. They can't smell it. They can't get it. And it's just stunning. And I understand that. And the story had to proceed for us to be able to know him today. But it still shocks me. They're humans just like us. And some of the things that they went through are just amazing. So let's pray as we begin and jump into things. All right? You ready? Fired up? Ready to go? Why are you all bowing your heads? I didn't say bow your heads. Come on. Just do it, right? Yeah. Okay, bow your heads. All right. Father, thank you that we can be in this room together as friends, friends of one another, and friends, more importantly, of you. And I just pray that you'd impact our life, that you'd touch us deeply. Jesus, we want to welcome you into this room, and we ask you to help us in our pursuit of you, to add fuel on the inside of our engine, to want to know you and love you and see the value of being close to you. So take us now, touch us now by your Spirit. Thank you for music that kind of draws us into who you are and reminds us in a melody way of how good it is to know you. And I just pray you'd touch each of our lives, every man, woman, and child. But more than anything today, we want to tell you collectively that we love you and we appreciate you and we're thankful for you above all the things in our life. And we want to live with that in mind. Not in a controlling way, but in a way that just exercises honest thankfulness day after day. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. And everybody said, well, if you happen to be new with us, welcome, by the way. And we're in a series entitled Journey with Jesus. And we're working our way chronologically through his life, step by step, event by event, and taking our time. And as we examine what happened, what he said, what he did, and maybe most importantly, how people reacted to him, because we want to be reactors. We want to react in our life in an appropriate, right way to the message of Jesus. And as we watch people, I know it was different back then than it is now. They didn't have freeways and cell phones and clocks and things like that, but it was just different. But they were still people like us. And it's certainly our dream and hope that as we move through things, that we can learn from them and learn from him. And our hope is to not just understand the facts better. We certainly always want to do that. We want to study his life. We want to study his words. We want to study what the scripture says and teaches in totality. But we don't want to get to a place where we just believe in him. That's a grand, wonderful first step to where you surrender and submit your life to him. And you ask him to come into your life in whatever way you do. You begin to follow him, and somewhere along the road and steps of following him, he really begins to own you, and you know it, and he knows it, and there's no doubt in your mind, and you have confidence in your relationship with him. And I don't know when that moment exactly happens. It just can't happen in a moment of time. You got to earn it along the way. We want to help you live a life that follows him. We want to fuel and feed into that want-to factor. And try to inspire that part of each one of us. At least that's the hope of this series and talking about him in particular. And learn how to build a desire to want to be close to him, to be as close as possible, to really get to a place where Jesus becomes the love of your life. Now, I don't care how long that takes. There's no rush. But if you could just begin to think on those terms in your own life, if you can begin to converse about those in your private life with people you love, if you can learn how to get friendships around you that inspire that love for Jesus in a real and honest, practical way. It is a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing, and that's certainly our hope. So today, Jesus faces number 3 and number 4. Jesus is a big deal on so many levels, and what Jesus faces, no one ever faced, certainly in totality. The opposition that he faced was fierce. It was intense. It was unbelievable. It was way over the top, way over the top. Other than Jesus and the whole story of him and who he was and what he accomplished, the most shocking part to me of this whole thing that we're kind of living through week by week is the religious leaders, their decisions, their obvious hypocrisy, their relentlessness with their goal to do away with Jesus. Now, they were just men like people, like we're people. But they just wouldn't stop. They couldn't let it go. They wanted Jesus dead, and they were locked onto that goal. And each step along the way, we see possible places where they could take an off-ramp. And it doesn't seem any of them do, ever. And it's just really stunning how overtaken a human can be, thinking they're doing the wrong thing. Or the right thing, but they're doing the absolute wrong thing. So just a little bit to get us going. You ready? Fired up, number 1. There in your notes. Jesus is accused publicly before Pilate. He's accused publicly before Pilate. We're calling Pilate number 3 today, by the way. We're shortening him to number 3. First, Jesus faced number 1, and number 1 was Annas. Annas, in the middle of the night, maybe somewhere between 1 and 3 o'clock, we sense. We're not sure of the time, certainly. They weren't sure of the time. They didn't have any clocks. It was just dark, right? And we're really tired. Then he was taken from number 1 to number 2, right? Who was Caiaphas? Number 1, Annas, was the past high priest. Number two, Caiaphas was the present high priest, his son-in-law. So we got the mucky mucks of the religious system that he's going before all of them. Then in the morning, as we're going to see, as their plan is moving forward to condemn and have Jesus done away with, Jesus is taken to number three, Pilate. I just plan on giving them numbers, so it just sounded kind of cool. I like having titles that nobody's ever used in the history of the world. I don't think that has ever been there in the history of the world because it's kind of silly, all right? You all right with silly? But it's true. All right, from our standpoint, number one, verse one. I hope you're willing to have fun today because I'm planning on having lots of fun. Number one, then Luke 23 says, after formally condemning Jesus, which was huge. I mean, once they condemned him, we saw last week that Judas, when he realized the gravity of what he had brought about and produced by his betrayal, and he's there and Jesus is coming out, and maybe even he peeked at him or looked at him with sad eyes and getting beat up, and he was blindfolded and being hit with fists, which I can't even imagine, not knowing when and where the next one was coming from. He couldn't even duck, and he was, talk about a sucker punch. That's just awful. I hate it. Worse than the slap the week before. But Judas just lost himself, got fully depressed, and he went out and he hanged himself. It's just, there was no hope for him. He was done. Then, after formally condemning Jesus, the whole assembly rose from Caiaphas's house, all the religious leaders, and Jesus headed out and led him off to Pilate. So they end up at Pilate's house, compound, palace, whatever it was at the time. Verse 2, and they began to accuse him. And what this simply means, they've been doing it before, but now it was public. It wasn't just a trial, sort of, or trying to get info or data, a fishing expedition at Annas's or at Caiaphas's house where he was dealt with roughly and trying to pull stuff out of him and accuse him and then condemn him. They began to accuse him, attacked him verbally in public. Now, this has never happened to me. Personally, people have attacked me privately and wanted to make appointments with me and didn't say nice things to me, which is always interesting when that happens. It's just always fascinating. Because I know it's not personal usually. It may sound personal. Hey, guys, how you doing? How you feeling, BJ? You look great. Are you doing good? Knees are working and all that stuff. This guy got hit by a car, a drunk driver. What day was it? February 15th of this year. Just got hammered, running. He's out trying to be in shape. And man, you look good, buddy. Oh, jeez. How happy are you that your big brother's still here? Oh, yeah, I know, happy. I'm sorry. I prayed for him, and then I stopped praying for him because, you know, life moves on. That's what happens. Is that too much for you? Yeah. Did you finish those bars? Yeah. You kept them all for yourself, though, right? Protein. Yeah. Where was I? Verse 2? You know, that's something Jesus would do. No, seriously. Life is about people. Life is all about people. It really is. I am so happy you're still here. Although heaven's a cool place, I sense. You know, and you could have gone there. Mom wouldn't have appreciated that, but I am so glad you're here. Now we get to watch you have a wife and kids and all that stuff and get a job and make money and all that stuff. You going to be a doctor still? Yeah, doctors took care of you. Okay, back to the text. Come on, Jim. So they're accusing him, and this is what they were saying. They were saying, we have found this man subverting our nation. Now, what are they talking about? They're saying, look, this Jesus right here is inciting rebellion. Mr. Pilate, Pontius Pilate, we call him Pee-Pee. By the way, he's inciting rebellion in your city where you are the one that's to keep the peace in this city as the Roman governor of all of Jerusalem. So it's you we bring him to. You need to get rid of this guy. You need to get rid of him. And not only is he subverting our nation, but secondly, they say he opposes payment of taxes to Caesar. So he teaches people, Pilate, that you're the governor over. He teaches people to not pay taxes and to render taxes unto Caesar, your king. By the way, the opposite is actually true, but why do facts matter when you have a goal? Showing the true character of these religious leaders. And then the third thing, and claims to be Messiah, a king. Yes, Pilate, he claims to be a king. Like Caesar claims to be a king. Now, they were really careful in saying Messiah and a king, but they're making that bold claim that he calls himself a king. The religious leaders offered no evidence at this point, gave no verifiable reports, called no witnesses, just hearsay on their part. They were powerful men. They mattered in all of Israel. And they're claiming this right in front of him. And the second thought here now is that Pilate and Jesus begin their dialogue. And it's an interesting dialogue, and we're going to kind of live through it. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. Now, Pilate's a judge, a governor, if you will. He's in charge of things. He's used to hearing people that there's claims made against, and they claim innocence, even guilty people. I've heard stories that prison is full of innocent people. I don't believe that. There may be a few mistakes that happen. But to get to Pilate's level, he's had a lot of experiences. This isn't his first rodeo, if you know what I'm saying. He knows what he's doing. Look at verse 12 in Matthew 27, another part of the same story in the Gospels. When he, Jesus, was accused by the chief priests and the elders in a public way, like we're talking about, making claims against him, he gave no answer. So this is so cool about Jesus. He didn't have to defend himself. Now, the truth is, anybody in their right mind is going to be very defensive. I mean, I don't know how defensive you are on 1 to 10. If somebody makes proclamations against you to your face in some way, I don't know if you put one hand up and go, whoa, wait a minute. Or you're a two-hander. No, 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 no. But most of us have a little bit of defensiveness, right? I mean, there's a little bit when somebody says something about us, to us, and we want to somehow, the head thing goes, you know, or there's a look, or especially those of us that are a little bit more emotional than others, that emotion just can be seen by those who know us sometimes. I love this about him. He didn't have to defend himself. He knew what the truth was. Now, he's living through a story. We all know where the story goes at the end of, or later in this day, horrible day, but a beautiful day as well. But he stood there, and he was without fear. And I want you to know, it's a little bit unnerving if somebody is being attacked by other people, and they stand there, and they're silent, and they give no answer, and they don't have fear on their face. You really don't know what to do with them. This is studly Jesus right here. Even though he's beaten up and probably bleeding, if you strike somebody's face with a blindfold on, they're hurt, they're wounded, they're bruised, they're abused. Verse 13, then Pilate asked him, so Pilate is perplexed by all this. Nobody does what he's doing, just stays silent. Don't you, Jesus, don't you hear what they're saying, the testimony they're bringing against you? Are you hearing what they're saying? This stuff is awful. This stuff, I could condemn you to death. He didn't say that, but everybody knows what's going on here. All of them, including Jesus. This is the Jesus that you love. But he makes no reply. Nothing. Crickets. Nothing. Nothing. Not even a single charge. He didn't pick one off and go, wait a minute, can I talk about this one? The little one over here? Silence, unheard of by normal people. That's the Jesus we love. In chapter 18, it tells us this about this very event. Pilate then went back inside after hearing the religious leaders accuse him, after asking this opening question from Jesus, and he summoned Jesus. In other words, he went inside his palace compound home, and he had him join him inside. And he asked him when he was on the inside, are you the king of the Jews? And what Pilate's asking him, very directly, are you guilty of the charges they're making? Are you, Jesus, a king? Are you? So Pilate takes Jesus inside for a private meeting. That's interesting. I don't think that's normal. But this whole thing kind of stinks. And Pilate's aware of that. This is not normal, what's going on here. And so he brings him inside. And to understand the backdrop here, the religious leaders would not have gone in his home, compound, or palace. And the reason why is because due to the rules, they would have been declared unclean if they went in a Gentile's house during Passover, and they wouldn't have been able to experience Passover. They would have been barred from participation, and we're in the middle of Passover, and they wouldn't have done that. And what's fascinating, now Jesus probably would have been taken in handcuffed, rope-tied, whatever he was, but he goes in without complaint. By the way, Jesus was the Passover. He was the Lamb. He was what Passover was created for. But they don't know that. But I just find those things all ironic and interesting. We'll pick it up in John 18, 34. So he says, are you the king? Are you the king? And this is so cool. I hope you get this. But Jesus starts messing with Pilate. And in truth, messing with us. But he's teaching us some really deep, beautiful stuff. He says this, Pilate, is that your own idea about me being king? In other words, are you thinking about these things, Pilate? And then he says, or did others talk to you about me? In other words, is it the accusations or has somebody before talked to you about me or what's going on in your mind? And so he answers a question that's pretty direct. It really deserved a yes or no with another question. I think we need to get better at this. I think sometimes we followers of Jesus fall down on the job here. And sometimes we get too direct with our words. And even we can get mean with the Bible. And when I see people that are mean with the Bible, it bothers me. And there is truth. But when people have signs that talk about hell, and I understand it's a reality. If you don't know Jesus, you don't end up in heaven. I get it. Believe me. But if there isn't kindness applied in our presentation, we are not following Jesus. That's part of what he's doing here. He's trying to teach us how to share with non-believers in his own life and people who are outside of faith. At least that's what I sense he's doing. So did others talk about me? And Pilate responds, kind of, he goes, am I a Jew? Well, everybody knows you're not a Jew. You're Roman. You're a leader. So he jumps right on the comment. He gets what he's saying. Maybe not the details or the depth of it like we might as followers, but he knows this prisoner is beginning to reason with me. And he's kind of coming at me. He goes, am I a Jew? And then he says, look, Jesus, your own people and chief priests, the leaders of your world, just handed you over to me. In other words, Pilate is simply repeating what the religious leaders had just done. Look, I didn't choose to have you here. They brought you here. They want me to take you out. And then he goes, curiously, he goes, well, Jesus, what is it that you've done? How did you get them so mad? I've never seen them so mad ever in my life. What's going on? What did you do? Did you mess with somebody's wife? Now, he didn't say that, but what did you do? Why are they so mad at you? What's real? And he asked Jesus to explain. He's saying, tell me, talk to me. We're alone now. You know, yeah, come on. And Jesus goes on and he tells him. And this stuff is so rich if you'll take it home. It is so good. It is so good. He says, oh, you're reading ahead, aren't you? You people. People. He says, my kingdom is not of this world. That is a stunning question to Pilate. We humans only know of this world except what we've listened to in Scripture. We don't know of another world. We can look through a telescope and see out there planets that have some weird names. This is Jesus presenting what's true to Pilate and to us. Take it home, people. Make this like a Christmas present to you. He's saying, I have a kingdom that is way bigger than here and now. Way bigger. I don't think anybody's ever said that to Pilate before. If somebody came to you today and said that to you, that was a friend, you go, dude, what have you been smoking? Something's wrong, fella. Right? Come on. But this is what he says to him. Then he goes on, if it were what? Of this world. He's dealing with reality. He's reasoning. And I think we people need to be better at reasoning with people who don't follow. We need to take it slow. He's taking it slow with Pilate. He's not rushing in, talking about the big issues hard and fast and attacking him spiritually, trying to get him to turn or burn. I hate that stuff. I don't want to be a part of that stuff. I don't believe that's the way you reach people. If love isn't involved, people aren't going to be reached. Where am I? I'm searching. My kingdom's not of this world. If it were, all right, yeah, I'm there. My servants would fight to prevent my arrest. Would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. So he's reasoning now. No earthly king would allow what's happened to me to happen. My arrest, and then actually my being brought before you with my hands tied. brought in here by soldiers. He goes, it would have been way different, Pilate, if my kingdom was of this world. But now, he says, in his reasoning, my kingdom is from another place. And I believe right at this point, he's coming after Pilate. And I think Pilate begins to sense it. I don't know that. It's like a divine appointment. I'm telling you, when you follow Jesus and when he becomes the primary love of your life, what happens is you don't have to go out and hustle people spiritually anymore. All you got to do is show up and say, I'm going to live out the principles of Jesus to the best of my ability, and I'm going to love him today. And in the midst of you living, you're going to have divine appointments that you didn't create, you didn't earn, you didn't as a salesman. Watch me now. Bless you. Watch me now. You didn't crank out. You don't have to crank them out, people. They'll come when you follow Jesus. He wants people reached more than me and you. This is a divine appointment right here, right now, with Jesus. Oh, can you believe it? He's giving him the truth right here. But now my kingdom is from another place. Verse 37. So Pilate steps into the conversation because he's getting it. This is heavy. This is deep. He's taking him into the deep end of the pool. We're not where it's just up to our waist. You are a king then. Pilate says, you are a king. Pilate seems confused here, but interested, not understanding. So you are a king. Jesus answers. He says, you say that I'm a king. In fact, let me tell you what's true, Mr. P.P. Pilate, Pontius. You can count on this when he says, in fact, Jesus' words. He says, the reason I was born. Now notice here, Jesus was born, and he was born of a virgin. Doesn't go into all those details, but he testifies the fact that he was really born. He goes, I was born and came into this world from outside of this world, as you know it, as a human being. Doesn't say that, but that's what he means. I joined the human race. God became man here. He says, I came into this world born. The reason I came is to testify, to communicate, to declare to the truth. You want to know why Jesus came? To testify to the truth. And oftentimes people can't handle the truth. We've heard that before, huh? So, the mission of Jesus was to show the truth, to tell the truth, to give the truth. Don't ever forget that. He goes on to say, this got serious, okay? Right now, we're sort of philosophizing. Nice, reasonable conversation going on with Pilate, powerful Pilate, Pontius. Everyone on this side of truth listens to me. So now here's the divide. There's a decision that has to be made. So, yes, I am a king. And those who listen to me have joined my kingdom. And they have me as their king. Now, Pilate wouldn't have understood this, but this is what he lays out to him. So what does Pilate say in verse 38? What's truth? He declares. He retorts. Now, go ahead and move on. I'll just get up with you, catch up with you just a second. Ask like a true skeptic here. And this is what most people are that live up and down your street. What is truth? This is where they're at. He doesn't want to listen anymore. He's done with this conversation. Pilate was a cynic. He didn't become a cynic right here. He already was. He's saying truth, truth, there is no truth. There is no truth. Pilate didn't want to hear about this silliness that he was laying out. And oftentimes, fascinating in the world, when Jesus comes up with definition and understanding and tenderness and information, people go, whoa, that's enough. I don't want any more. You know it. You experience it in your life. Because what happens, practically speaking, if you're in a mixed group of believers and non-believers, and there's a conversation happening, and somebody, maybe not even you, brings up something about Jesus, and it's just a matter of time where somebody in that group, if it's a male group especially, but somebody will say, hey, did you hear that Luke Walton is the new coach of the Lakers? She's gone. Conversation's gone. Or, hey, have you seen that new movie? No. Doesn't matter what movie. And the conversation just shifts. It never parks there. Why is that when it's about Jesus? Why? Ask that question in your personal life. The reason why is he is so powerful that It undoes people at times. Not everybody, not you. Look, you're sitting here, I'm talking about Jesus the whole time. I can't shut up about Jesus, and you actually, I think, like it. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep coming back. Imagine, again, he's talking to Jesus, about his kingdom, face to face. And he doesn't know it. The Son of God, the Messiah, the one who can save him, he doesn't know that. But it's just ironic. Number three, let's keep moving. Pilate tries to end this ridiculous trial. He tries to end it. So Pilate and Jesus return outside from their meeting. So they're back out with the religious leaders. You got to believe they're wondering, what the heck were they talking about in there, right? It's because they know they're liars. They know they've made this up. They're wondering, are we going to get in trouble? And again, it's interesting to note that Jesus went inside, that they wouldn't go inside even if they were invited. He isn't limited to rules or legalism, and neither are you or I. It's a beautiful thing to be free indeed in Jesus. You can meet up with anybody when you're there for the right reason. So they reappear out front, and there's got to be some curious looks on the religious leaders' faces and some attitudes happening and some like small conversations going on that we can't know about. Look at verse 4 in Luke 23. Then Pilate announced to the chief priests and the crowd in front of everyone in a public way for all to hear. He says, I find no basis for a charge against this man, Jesus. Nothing. He's free. Pilate was satisfied with Jesus, that he was innocent of all charges. Right here, these guys have an off-ramp. They have an off-ramp to what they're about to do. Now, I know you go, Jim, Jesus had to die for me and you and the whole world. I know, but they had an off-ramp. They had an off-ramp. His official ruling was Jesus is not guilty of a crime against Rome. Pilate doesn't want any part of this, is the truth behind this. This is a sham, and he knows it. I don't know whether Jesus intimidated him or influenced him in this kingdom conversation. I'm not sure. There are some historians, and we'll get into it in a few weeks, that talked about maybe Pilate became a believer later in life after all this debacle of this stuff. But this is not what Pilate wants to do this morning of Passover. This is not what he wants. Number four, religious leaders wanted him gone or dead. This is just the truth. They would not be denied. They would not listen to Pilate's authority. It didn't matter what anybody said. They wouldn't listen. And that is hard-headedness. That is arrogance. They wouldn't be deterred from their goal. And it amazes me. These guys were given every opportunity to stop the madness, to reevaluate, to face the reality of what was happening. And the truth is, and we're going to talk about this a little bit towards the end, but anger had taken over their life. It began to dominate them. It had taken over this group. And when anger hits not just an individual, but a group of people, it gets very, very dangerous. Look at verse 5 in Luke 23. But they insisted. The idea is they didn't just insist once. They kept on insisting with their power and their position and their collective argument. They wouldn't stop. They wouldn't be silenced. He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching, just what he says. He's a rebel. He's a revolutionary. And he's destroying things. Jesus is messing things up with the people. This is a code word or a code saying for the people aren't listening to us anymore. They're listening to him. They're ticked. They're jealous. And they go on to say he started in Galilee and has come all the way here. 3 years ago, this whole thing started at some silly wedding that was boring and he lit it up. And slowly but surely, his poison has moved from Galilee all the way here to Jerusalem. And remember, you're here to keep the peace. Pontius, Pilate's trapped. He knew Jesus was innocent. At least I believe he believed that. And these religious leaders were just jealous and wouldn't be denied. He understood what was going on. He's heard about his great power. We know from John 19, 7 through 9, Pilate had to appease these religious leaders. So he was, again, number five, Pilate looks for another way out of this whole thing. He didn't want any part of this. This was a loser from every angle for him. He was stuck in the middle of something that was messy that didn't smell right, and he knew it. Look at Luke 23:6. On hearing this, that it started in Galilee, again, Pontius Pilate's a smart man or he wouldn't have been in his position. Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. Again, Pilate's looking for a way out. Is he from Galilee? Is he a Galilean? A Galilean was a person from Galilee, which was home to Jesus his whole life, except when he traveled. Of his 32 parables, 19 of them were given in Galilee. Big part of his life was lived there. Verse 7, when he learned, Pilate, that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction, Herod being over Galilee and Perea, this is the Herod, by the way, that took out John the Baptist in a dinner party, all right? He sent him to Herod. So Pilate had a way out. So Jesus is sent to number 4, all right? It wasn't abnormal for one judge to send transfer a prisoner to another judge who was also happened to be in Jerusalem at the time, not in Galilee, because of Passover. So Jesus is sent to the fourth, and I want you to get this today, the fourth high-level authority in that area. So we've got Annas number 1, Caiaphas number 2, Pilate number 3, and now he's being sent to Herod. I mean, this is just unheard of. Within 10 hours, this probably never happened to any other human being on planet Earth. Who gets this kind of attention? Nobody. Nobody but Jesus. I mean, it's part of what makes him Jesus. Be blown away by this. His life was so beyond normal, and for good reason. Number 6, Jesus is sent to Herod, who was curious. Who was curious? Herod, this is Herod Antipas. We're going to call him Ha. H-A. Okay, if that's okay with you. And he was the son of Herod the Great. Herod the Great died in 4 BC. When he died, his kingdom was divided amongst his sons. Ha, Herod Antipas, was given Galilee and Perea, and he was a ruler there for 35 years. Look at verse 8. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased. Now, I love these words. These are beautiful. Circle the word, greatly pleased. I like this. Well, what goes through your mind and your emotions at the thought of, I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to hear about Jesus? And one of the great compliments I've gotten in my life is from Carlos. And he isn't here. He'd be embarrassed if I said this. If I brought him up here, he'd go, Jim, you can't do that. But his wife told me, it was a year ago. Shows you, when you compliment me, I remember because there's few. But she said to me, and I'll never forget it. She said, it's amazing, Jim, my husband looks forward to every Sunday morning. He can't wait to get here on Sunday morning to hear you speak. I'll never forget it in my life. It was so honoring. Like a cowboy, a mature cowboy, ex-fireman, sits right there where Ed is, or maybe one back. And he's a gentleman. Many of you know Carlos. Quiet gentleman, but he is a dude. And he, you know, I don't know that it's still true, but I'm assuming that. Okay? And this guy is pleased that he's going to get to see Jesus. I like that. Okay. Because for a long time, he had been waiting to see him. So he's pleased because he wanted to see him before. I like that. Herod wanted to see Jesus, even though he was only an inch deep, had no spiritual connection at all, but he did want to see him. And I ask you, do you want Jesus? Is he welcome in your life? Do you have a door open for him in every area of your life? He goes on from, and the idea is, why did he, was he pleased and looking forward to it? Why, what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform a sign of some sort. So here we go, a little bit in the dark here. But like most, he wanted to see something spectacular. I mean, imagine with me for fun, if right here I could say on Mother's Day, I'm going to do something that is miraculous. Right here. I'm going to blow you away right here. Because I couldn't say it if I wasn't going to do it. That's why I'd never say it, because I can't do it. If I had David Copperfield, I could do some stuff next week that would blow your mind, but it's just because he's so good, right? He wanted to see a miracle. He wanted to blow everybody's mind to his own and say, oh, I was there in the room when? Right? Verse 9. So he plied him with many questions, question after question concerning the accusations, but Jesus gave him no answer. Same as with Pilate. He gave him nothing. I got nothing to say. I'm not going to defend myself. There is a message here that if you will find a way to stop defending yourself when people attack you, you'll be better off. You don't have to be defended. Live right. More fights come because people have to defend themselves or they get defensive. So if you live with a defensive person, you have to live careful all the time. That's the truth, and it's sad. It's very sad. You can't talk honestly because if you talk honestly, you might tick them off. So you're careful. All day long. 360. If you can possibly trust Jesus with your defensiveness, you can become a nicer person, you can become an easier person, and you can become more gentle in your life. Defensiveness is horrible. It's like control, but it's a different thing. Boy, all of us have a desire to control what's around us for good purpose. But if you get honest, what can you really control? You have a tough time controlling yourself. I get back to it to get you out of here. I could take you right through lunch there, but we're not going to do that. So he plied him with many questions, but Jesus didn't give him any answer. The silence was not normal. Everybody defends himself when falsely accused. They make stuff up in their mind. They got to fix what's wrong. Jesus, bring it on. Bring it on. And he's not fearful. Number 7 and last, the religious leaders had an anger problem. And we've seen this over and over again. That's how what's happening continues to happen. It means that it's fueled by something. And the fuel here is anger and resentment and jealousy and arrogance. And if you allow that kind of stuff to dominate the inside of you, you are not happy. You live at least a third to a half mad every day. And you may be good at squashing it and reining it in so you don't think anybody knows it. Everybody around you that knows you the best knows it. And that's the truth. Verse 10, Luke 23. The chief priests and the teachers of the law, this is the spiritual leadership of Israel that are called upon to be an example before others, to show people how to follow God and his ways. We're standing there in front of Herod and Jesus and everybody else that was present. Vehemently. Now, what does vehemently mean? It means with conviction and done forcefully. One guy didn't say, I'll be the spokesman for these religious leaders, and we really believe Jesus did some bad things. These guys were yelling and screaming, mob-wise, the biggest among them, vocally probably was the loudest. And they would go back and forth. The idea is, vehemently, is with passion, one's whole heart. Accusing him after they'd already accused him. Now they're doing it again. They're unwilling to accept how Jesus is being dealt with. Lying about him, making things up concerning him. They were totally enraged. Totally enraged. A mob. Now, practically speaking, in terms of how can we apply this message to our life in real ways, anger can dominate your life if you allow it to. And some people are locked on and they're stuck in this stuff, and it's not good. It can produce great emotional chaos, not only in your life, but in the life of those that have to function around you, in your home, in your marriage, at work. Anger, it can produce fear in other people if they're afraid of you. And anger, when you meet an angry person, you get careful. Anger is like a wrecking ball, and a big one. It smashes things. And once something's smashed, it's never quite the same. It can be rebuilt. It can be retooled together, but it's never the same. It's never the same. Anger can dominate your life. Well, what do we learn? Number one, become curious about Jesus like Herod. I never thought I'd write a line that said, be like Herod. Because this guy was a bad dude. But you know what? I like that Herod was pleased to see Jesus. I like those words. That he waited a long time to see him. The idea is he was curious. He was interested. Yeah, for selfish reasons. He wanted to see something spectacular. But if you haven't yet started following Jesus, and you can't raise your hand and say, I am and want to be a more close follower of Jesus in my life, build your curiosity. Just get eager. Get interested concerning him. Be fascinated by his name and his claims and his promises. His promises are so inviting when you hear them. And if you'll just give me 6 months to 2 years, and then after 2 years, just dump me, flush me, just like the toilet. You can't, though. Why? Because Jesus is not about me. It's about the message of Jesus. When you hear it over and over again, when you lock it in, something changes. He changes you. Number two, running from problems doesn't work. And it's something we all like to do. Pilate was trying to duck and cover. Pilate was trying to send his problems to others. Just take care of it. Pilate was trying to not face what was right in front of him. That's his story. To pass responsibility to others. And what I want to challenge you with is change your game plan in life. And how can I possibly do that? Just some thoughts here. If you have a difficult phone call to make to somebody that you don't want to make, I say make it sooner, not later. Now ask Jesus for help. Ask him to give you wisdom, if you're a Jesus follower, more certainly. If that's Jesus calling to ask about something, I want to talk to him. So I've been waiting. I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. Make the call. Just make the call. Because I've found in my life, if I wait for a day or a week, that call is harder than it was today. Because you know what? There aren't that many of those calls. But if it has to happen, make it. And be forgiving. Be willing to take the hit if you need a hit in the situation. And don't fear the way we normally fear. If you're facing challenges of any sort, gain courage and move out towards it. Don't let it just destroy you. Don't let it just take you out. Learn to move towards the tough stuff because of who Jesus is in your life. Running never works. Geographicals never work. Physically or emotionally, if you run away from, say, it doesn't help. Many things will never be solved in our life. They'll never be understood. It's okay. Running from problems doesn't work. Certainly didn't work for Pilate because I think Jesus may end up back with him. We'll see as we move on with the story. Number three, anger. Anger has a way of destroying things. We've already said that. But I kind of want to close with this thought. Anger filled this whole period of time. This is why, as I started talking about it, fascinates me how they never took the off-ramp. All the blows that Jesus took, all the mocking that he has to go through all night and this day. And for you and me, if we allow anger to settle in us, to become a part of who we are, if we allow anger to motivate us to move or to react, because anger is serious in our life. We all know it, whether it's quiet or loud inside of us, personality-wise. If we allow anger to be our go-to emotion, and we have that don't mess with me thing, you will destroy things that you really want and that you really love. Oftentimes the things you love the most. Now, big question is, how do we get over it, our anger? How do we get past anger? Because we all have to deal with this, whether it's out loud or on the inside and pushed down. How do we get beyond difficult losses in our life, no matter what it is? Oh, watch this. I got you right where I want you right now. Close those doors to people and enjoy.
My senior year of high school, and during that time, the Vietnam War was going on, and back in those days, they had a draft for the military. And while you're in college, you were granted a deferment. So as soon as my brother graduated from college, the deferment went away, and then he was classified 1A. It wasn't long after that that he received his greetings letter from the government that he was drafted. And I do remember the fear, the conversations, I know what it's like over there. I don't particularly look forward to these next days. I remember like it was yesterday, coming home from school. And as I went into our condo, I thought it was curious that my brother's car was there. because he worked, and ordinarily his car wasn't there. The house was quiet. I asked, hey Mike, are you there? That's my brother. Nothing. Thought maybe he was just out for a walk, out talking to somebody, something. And then I went upstairs. And when I went upstairs, hey, there are a lot of years removed from this, but it still affects me. I go upstairs and there in a walk-in closet and my brother's in my room, on the ground was my brother. He had taken his own life. Now, there's nothing on earth that would ever prepare anybody for that. What do you do? I screamed. I pulled him out of the room. I started doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Called my mom. I can't even remember what I said, but I know it came out awful. And the next thing I can remember is hearing the sirens of the police or the fire department, people showing up. And the rest of the events are pretty much a blur, but I can remember this profound emptiness, this sense that whatever was good in the past is gone now. I was really angry with God. I finally started dating a gal that I ended up marrying. She invited me to go to her church, so we went. My last thoughts about God were thoughts of anger. Anger was all I had reserved and stored up for God. And so now I find myself in a church listening to someone in a reasonable way talk about Jesus, who understood suffering. Jesus, who understood what it means to live in a hopeless world. Jesus, who understands what it means to feel all alone. The answer to my hopelessness was this fresh look at Jesus. When your life gets filled up with God and hopelessness is filled with hope, especially when you don't think there's a reason, a way, a vehicle for that to happen. And then it happens. The effects of that are astounding. Because every person who's ever walked a road of hopelessness is not at peace. And I've walked it. And I have found in my life, that the only thing that filled that void Jesus Christ. The truth and the accuracy of who God is speaks to hopelessness.
That is so good. Right? Let's pray. Lord, thank you that you can speak to us and to our emotions. Thank you that you understand where we hurt, where we have pain, and that you want to jump right in at that place. Thank you. Thank you for how you impact our life, how you give us confidence where we couldn't have it on our own. And we just want you to know we appreciate you, and we want to love you. And I pray, Lord, you help us to touch and reach the lives of other people with respect and love, gently, that we could reach out like Jesus did to Pilate in whatever way we can. We love you. In Jesus' name, and everybody said, have a wonderful day.
Leave it all behind.
Leave it all behind. Give me a hug, dude. I need a hug. Leave it all behind. I almost did this in the middle of the service.